Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
And incidentally, thank you very much to Jack Ablin, who sent over to all of us here on the John Williams Show a big tin of Garrett popcorn last week. That's a nice and healthy treat. Speaking of which, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. And maybe they don't agree that that's such a healthy treat, now that I think about that, because there's a lot of cheese, salt, and sugar on that Chicago mix of popcorn. Let's visit with Dr. Michael Bauer, the medical director at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. Doctor, welcome back to the show. I hope you're well.
I am doing well, and thanks for having me. And John, who doesn't like a great Chicago mix from Garrett? Come on.
But that's so like us, isn't it? It's like, hey, popcorn, I have this nutritionist on every week, and she's always talking about smart snacks and food choices, and that would be one. But then what do? We put cheese, salt, and sugar on there, and then it's really good.
And who doesn't love it, right?
Thank you.
The buzzword, everything in moderation.
Here's a buzzword, December 12th, 2019. 2 days, in 2 days, we will be at the five-year anniversary of a cluster of patients in China's Hubei province and the capital city of Wuhan experience the symptoms of an atypical pneumonia-like illness that does not respond well to standard treatments. We are 2 days away from the five-year anniversary of first hearing about COVID, Doctor.
Wow. What have we learned since then, and how far have we come in treating what used to be a horrific pandemic that now is largely reduced to another respiratory illness that we can't let our guard down about, but fortunately, as I like to say, this is not your grandfather's COVID anymore.
Meaning that it's not as dangerous?
That for most people, that is absolutely correct. Just based on how the virus has mutated and changed and turned into a more similar other respiratory virus. Caution, though, do everything you can to protect yourself. Yeah. Because if you are at risk, vulnerable, no different than getting the flu or RSV, it can still cause a lot of problems, especially in our highest risk patients.
You just said, Doctor, so what have we learned in the last 5 years? I'll let you answer that after I do. We've learned two things. One is, when you want to communicate to the public about a healthcare protocol, you need to find a good way to do it. And just telling them, trust us, this is the better route, isn't sufficient. I would think that would be one thing. And the other thing is I marvel at how quickly we were able to find a vaccine and get it to people. That was a moonshot, and we did it in real time.
John, that truly was incredible. Not only a vaccine, but largely safe and effective vaccines that saved literally thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. It truly was a medical miracle. I do think we learned, though, making sure that we are transparent in our communication. Remember, we were learning so much about this on the fly. There was a great thirst for knowledge every day about what's going on. And we really could have done a better job at communicating and saying, to the best that we know, here are the steps you should be taking, and things will change.
Maybe that was the one lesson that Dr. Fauci had to learn the hard way, right?
Little bit. I still do applaud him for a lot of the great work. You have to remember, he had the public's best interest at heart, but as we learned, there was a method to his madness, but we could have done things better.
Well, do you think it was a mistake looking back? And I'm not critical of Dr. Fauci at all. If Joe Biden issues one more pardon, I would preemptively pardon Anthony Fauci, because they may come after him because some people in this world are ridiculous. But I wonder if, you know, he handled it properly. I just suddenly lost my train of thought about my next question about that. But I do think that he is going to be unfairly targeted for what happened. Oh, and the question would be then, looking back, I wonder if the restrictions we put on kids was a mistake.
That, I don't know that we'll ever truly know that, because if we didn't have some of those restrictions, how many more children may have actually suffered from getting COVID and the downstream effects of that? Some of the newer data coming out really shows that some of our younger patient children and adolescents may have actually been at higher risk for getting long-term COVID. So I don't know that we'll ever really have the answer to that. I do think they did the best that they could under the circumstances in saying, we're going to go through all these protective measures rather than having to pivot and saying, oh my God, we should have done those things. We didn't do them when we could have intervened.
Well, also in retrospect, I think if you were going to err on that side of safety and caution, I get that. By the way, there was a raft, was it 75 medical luminaries signed a letter begging the new administration not to make RFK Jr. in charge of healthcare in America. I don't know if you saw that, or how important is that position to healthcare in America? It's obviously a political appointment, but maybe it's mostly that. It wouldn't really trickle down to affecting healthcare the way we deliver it. What's your thought about that?
I'm not sure that I really agree with that statement. Remember, HHS is part of the federal government. What is its mission statement? To protect the health of U.S. citizens, provide essential human services, and they do that based on sound advances in sciences and underlying medicine, public health, and social services. That's their mission statement. If we have somebody in charge of that that really does not have the right approach, and by that I mean denial of scientific evidence, not the right thought process to things. We do want people that have critical thinking skills, right, and ask the right questions. But when you don't rely on scientific evidence to make sound decisions, that is really quite worrisome. And even for me, the notion that he's even being considered for this position, that really gets out to the public that, boy, this guy knows what he's talking about, can be trusted almost as a source of truth. And when we look at so many of the statements he has made in the past and so many of the things that he has tried to advance, such as the anti-vaccination piece of things, remember, he's going to have a large influence over the CDC, over the NIH, the CDC's ability to promote vaccines and make new recommendations about things, how we monitor infectious diseases and the potential for the next pandemic, right? There's things out there, and I'm not saying this to scare our audience, but you look at bird flu, you look at dengue fever, and other things that are on the rise. We have experts in those fields monitoring those things. We have to be prepared for the next potential outbreak of something. And if we have somebody that comes in and really disrupts the process, that's quite worrisome and bothersome to me.
Now, here it is. Producer Pete handed it to me. More than 75 Nobel laureates. I said medical luminaries. Nobel laureates have written an open letter describing Kennedy's selection for HHS secretary as detrimental to public health. They said he would put the public health in jeopardy and undermine our global leadership in health services. We're talking to Dr. Michael Bauer from Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. Two quick questions for you, doctor. One is, I saw a really funny story. It says, does blowing your nose make cold symptoms worse? And the experts say that if you want to blow your nose, and who doesn't, you should do it gently, one nasal at a time. Have you seen that? Do you have any thoughts about that?
They don't quite have a course on that in medical school, but what I think they're referring to there is, remember, we normally help clear mucus in a one-way direction, kind of going outward, that we have these little hairs called cilia that will help with the flow of mucus outward. And what you don't want to do is kind of go in the reverse direction or 180-degree reversal of that flow, where potentially viruses and bacteria can go back up into otherwise sterile areas like your sinuses.
That's exactly what they said. That's exactly what they said. And they had they said there was this study that showed they put dye in people's nose and they blew real hard. And they said the dye went back up into the cavity. And if that's a marker for whatever's making you sick, you got to do it gently, not hard. Who knew?
That's correct. Although I don't want your public to think that, boy, if I blow my nose, I'm going to make myself sicker. just do it gently. Use a nice soft tissue. I am a big fan of saline flushes as well to gently wash out all that mucus. One other word, caution on decongestants. If any of the listeners use them, they do, you get a really good feeling after them because it helps dry up your nose. You have to be very, very cautious because we see people, if you overuse them for longer than a day or two maximum, you start getting rebound effects of an even worse runny nose. So I like to tell all my patients, extreme caution with decongestants. I don't like using them. I'd much rather use just a little saline, gentle flush.
This conversation sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. And on that, we have to end our conversation today. Doctor, you're always a delight and a great help to talk to.
Thank you very much, John. Always appreciate it. Everyone take care and have a happy holiday season.
Dr. Michael Bauer over at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital.